Good morning. It's good to have so many with us here, and those who are visiting with us, certainly you are our honored guests. We're glad you are able to worship with us this morning. We have been doing a series of lessons through the book of 1 Samuel, and we will continue to do that this morning. If you want to be turning to chapter 24 of 1 Samuel, and ever since David killed Goliath, his life has just been dodging Saul, dodging death through the hands of Saul. Saul tried to kill him himself on a few occasions. He tried to get the Philistines to kill him. And when all those things didn't work, David was just been on the run hiding from the king. And so the last where we picked off last time was in verses 15 to 18 of chapter 21, where we see Jonathan, the king's son, going to David. He knew where he was, and strengthening his hand in the Lord. Well, right after that, the people of Ziph, the Ziphites, go and tell King Saul, "We have found David. We know exactly where he is." And so Saul is very thankful for that. And he tells him, "I want you to go make sure that you have his exact location because, quote, he is very cunning." In other words, he is very, he knows how to get rid of me. The Lord had nothing to do with that, right? But he is very cunning. And David hears word that Saul knows where he is. So he goes to the wilderness of Moab. And so that's where Saul goes. And then it is in the wilderness of Moab where David is on one side of the mountain, and Saul and his crew of over 1,000 are on the other side of that mountain, and they are about to capture David when word comes that the Philistines are invading Israel. So Saul, of course, not knowing how close he is to capturing his enemy David, he goes off and fights the Philistines. And so then David goes to the strongholds of En-Gedi. And that's where we're picking up in chapter 24. So look with me where we have kind of David's opportunity to kill Saul. Picking up in verse 1, it says, "When Saul returned from following the Philistines, he was told, 'Behold, David is in the wilderness of En-Gedi.' Then Saul took 3,000 chosen men out of all Israel and went to seek David and his men in the front of the wild goats' rocks. And he came to the sheepfolds, by the way, where there was a cave, and Saul went in to relieve himself. Now David and his men were sitting in the innermost parts of the cave. And the men of David said to him, 'Here is the day of which the Lord said to you, Behold, I will give your enemy into your hand, and you shall do to him as it seems good to you.' Then David arose and stealthily cut off a corner of Saul's robe, and afterward David's heart struck him, because he had cut off a corner of Saul's robe. He said to his men, 'The Lord forbid that I should do this thing to my Lord, the Lord's anointed, to put out my hand against him, seeing he is the Lord's anointed.' So David persuaded his men with these words and did not permit them to attack Saul. And Saul rose up and left the cave and went on his way." So Saul is going to relieve himself, and that is exactly where David is. Certainly you have Saul completely vulnerable, completely helpless. Instead of 3,000 against David, you have David and his 300 against Saul. And God has certainly had his hand in this situation. And so in verses 4 and 5, we have David very much encouraged, "Strike him down." David's men remind him of what God told him. They said, "Behold, I will give your enemy into your hand, and you shall do to him as it shall seem good to you." I don't see any reason to doubt that God said this to David. And it was used as a test. So God set this scenario up to David to see how he would respond towards his enemy Saul. Certainly, you have his men in favor. David, you just say the word and we will do it. That would make our life a lot easier, not having to run from this man all the days. Now in verses 6 and 7, you have David, of course, cutting off part of Saul's robe and then feeling bad about even doing that. But in verses 6 and 7, you have David's explanation as to why he did not kill Saul. Notice the strong use of language that he says. He says, "God forbid that I raise up my hand against his anointed." Now David, remember, has killed many people, right? Goliath being one and a number of the Philistines being others. So it's not that David is against killing. David is against murdering. And especially the idea that Saul, being the king of Israel, the king whom God had set up. Two times in verse 6, you have David saying he is not just Saul, he is the Lord's anointed. David was not going to kill the man whom God appointed to be king over his people. May God forbid that I do this. And then he says in verse 7 that David did not permit his men to attack Saul. So maybe their argument would be, Saul, okay, David, we understand that you don't want to do this. Just have one of us do it. That way the blood will be on our hands, not yours. So it seems to me that not only did David not kill Saul, David had to kind of persuade his men that for them not to do it. Killing Saul would have made their lives a lot easier, not just David's. But with these words, David persuaded them this was not the right thing to do. And so in verses 8 to 15, you have this speech that David gives to Saul. And in verse 8, you have David calling out to Saul. He informs Saul and his men, "I am here." And he says, "My Lord and King." A very respectful greeting to a man who wants his head. And then David bows down, paying homage to Saul, showing him great respect. And in verses 9 through 11, you really have the idea of David trying to persuade Saul, trying to get him to understand, "I am not out to get you. I am not trying to harm you." And he says in verse 9, "Why do you believe men who say that I seek your harm? Why do you believe that report? What would ever give you evidence that that is true?" And he says, "God just gave me into your hand in the cave just a second ago. While you were relieving yourself, I could have killed you. And for proof of that, here is the corner of your robe. It would be so easy for me to just say the word and you would no longer be here. This robe, or part of this robe, proves that no wrong or treason is in my hand. This proves that I have not sinned against you, even though you wanted to kill me." And then in verses 12 to 15, David makes this point. He says, "May God judge between us. May God be the avenger of me, but I will not kill you. I will not take revenge against you, even though I had the opportunity to do so." And in verse 13, David reminds Saul of this proverb. "Out of the wicked comes wickedness. How are you deemed wicked? By your actions." So he says, "Saul, Don't deem me wicked. Because out of the wicked comes forth wickedness. I did nothing of the sort. Don't label me in this way, even though we could label you in that way because of what you have done. In verse 14, it says, Why are you after me? Who am I? Right? I'm nothing but a dead dog. I am just a flea. I'm a nobody. And here you are, searching all of Israel, all of Judah, in search for this dead dog, this nobody. And then in verse 15, he goes back to God and says, may God consider me righteous. God, you've put him in my hand as what seems best to me. God, may you see my actions as righteous. Well, this certainly gets Saul's attention. And Saul has his speech to David. He says, may God, basically weeping. Is this you, my son, David? Remember, after David calling him father. Is this you, David, my son? And he says, you are certainly better than I am. There's no way I would have acted in the way that you did. I have been acting for years trying to kill someone who is innocent, someone who is righteous. In fact, may God bless you because you did not kill me. God knows I would not have acted in the same way. And in verse 20, this is what Saul has been struggling with ever since he realized back in chapter 18 that David is the next king of Israel. He says, I know that that will happen. I have been for years trying to make that not happen. But I understand now, because of how you've displayed your righteousness, that you will be king. Therefore, make me this promise, O dead dog, O flea. Swear to me that you will not kill my house, that you will not destroy all of my descendants. And David says, I will do that. And then in verse 22, you basically have them going their separate ways. David in this chapter teaches us how to respond when you have been unfairly treated, maybe for years. What do you do with someone who you would just say is just plain wicked? Through their actions, they are just wicked. Let me try to describe to you who I am talking about. Who I am referring to. Who is someone wicked in your life? I hope, I speak for everyone when we say we don't have a King Saul in our life who daily we are having to flee because someone is literally trying to kill us with thousands of men. I hope that's not the case. But do you have an enemy? Do you have someone who is just wicked in your life? What was Saul's deal? Why was Saul so wicked towards David? Really, the answer was in chapter 18. Where we see incredible jealousy come from King Saul. Remember that number one hit in all of Israel? David has slain his 10,000s and Saul his thousands. That burned him up. And he says, they are ascribing David 10,000s and me only thousands. What more can they give him but the kingdom? Therefore, I will get rid of him. Right? It was jealousy that led to this hatred. Saul disobeyed God, When God said, do this, he said, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to do it my own way. And that's what led God to say, I have torn the kingdom away from you, and I am giving it to someone who is better than you. Someone who is after, who follows my heart. Saul knew David would be the next king. But Saul wanted more than anything else for Jonathan to be the next king. Therefore, Saul made it his goal to kill David. Whenever the Philistines weren't attacking Israel, it was his job to attack David. Saul put himself and his desires first in life, which made David his enemy. What did David do? Nothing. What did Saul do? This was all based on jealousy, and this was all based on selfish desires. That's what stemmed from everything else, chapter 18, going on in Saul's life. Let me ask you this question. Have you ever been unfairly treated by someone and that you did nothing wrong? Let me give you just a silly illustration that hopefully helps this point. Have you ever been cut off while driving? And you just want to teach that someone a lesson? You should never cut off anyone else in your life, and I am going to prove this point to you by laying on my horn until the horn goes off. Therefore, you will learn you have treated me unfairly by slowing me down from 45 miles an hour to 35 miles an hour. And now you're just going so slow. How do people normally respond when someone treats them unfairly? We have this phrase that was not new to our generation, not new to Jesus' generation. What did the Pharisees say? I say an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. If someone does wrong to you, the best thing you can do is teach them a lesson. If someone knocks out your tooth, you knock out theirs. Someone pokes you in the eye, you got two to pick from, right, for theirs. I tell you, it is very natural for us to respond in this kind of way, in a frustrated manner. It is natural to have an eye for an eye attitude, yet how does that normally go? Usually it escalates. It just gets worse and worse. First it's the eye, then it's the tooth, then it's the whole head, then it's your knee, then it's, you know, every part of your body is bruised by the end of the fight. It is easy to hold a grudge against that person who treated you so unfairly, who had no right to do what they did. What's the better way to deal with them? And David gives us such a beautiful illustration of how to deal with people who have treated you so unfairly without cause. What's the better way to deal with them if the eye for an eye is not the answer? Let me suggest two things that will really help us. Number one, we need to see sin as the problem. Sin is the foundational problem. What is the problem with Saul? It's not David. It's sin. It's jealousy. It's selfishness. It's pride. That is what Saul's problem was. When someone treats us unfairly, how do we normally view that situation? What a terrible person, right? Instead of, man, sin has a hold of them. They are not handling that temptation the way they need to. Instead of seeing their behavior against you, See how Satan has got your enemy to fall into sin. And that's exactly what David did. Notice again what David says in his speech towards Saul. I believe it's in verse 9. Look at it again. It says, "And David said to Saul, 'Why do you listen to the words of men who say, behold, David seeks your harm?'" Saul, why in the world are you listening to them? That's your problem. You're believing false reports about me. When we see other people's reactions toward us as falling into sin, it becomes less personal. And I think so many times when people do something against us, we take it personally. We said, "I need to teach this guy a lesson he will never forget." Instead, can we have sympathy and say, there's probably a reason why he's reacting in this way that does not excuse his reactions. But I am so frustrated that sin has such a hold on this guy that he reacts towards me in that way. And then what do? Once we see the problem is sin, then we go that next step and say, well, how can I help? How can I help this person out of their sin? But when we see sin as the foundation, our reaction changes. Our whole mindset changes. An eye for an eye does not help the situation. We may feel better in the short run when we hit someone back, or you fill in the blank. It usually escalates, right? It is a good way to end any influence with them. If we have the mindset, well, I'm going to get back at them. Instead, what's going on? What's the real issue? David says, why in the world are you listening to others? We ask ourselves, why did they react in that way towards me? Is there any way I could help them past that reaction that they had towards me? The closer we are to someone, the harder this is. Right? And remember who this is with David and Saul? This is his father-in-law. It's really hard to have an attitude of how can I help when it's someone you're really close to. But maybe that's when we need this attitude the most. Notice again, looking at this text, how David reacts towards Saul in this chapter that gives us such a good reminder of how we need to react when someone mistreats us. Again, it's really hard to compete with David and having an enemy like Saul. I don't think any of us could say, yep, David, I have an even worse enemy than you. I think all of us would say we're kind of a downgrade from this kind of relationship. But notice what David does. He says, I am not going to take revenge. I am not going to avenge myself. That job, that responsibility belongs to God. This temptation certainly would have been extremely strong, extremely difficult for David not to say the word, kill him. They reminded him, remember what God said? Remember when he said, I will give your enemy into your hand, and then you shall do what seems best to you. You remember when God said that? This is God giving him into our hand. Nothing in that statement did God say, go ahead and kill him. Do what seems best to you. David getting rid of Saul would have gotten rid of an enemy, would have gotten rid of this life on the run, fleeing from mountain to mountain. it would have been a shortcut to being the king over all of Israel. And isn't that what sin is? Isn't that what temptation is? It's just a shortcut to what we want. What if David had killed Saul? Have you ever thought about playing that out? What if David said, go ahead and kill him? What would have been the repercussions of that? It wouldn't have been all roses for David. There would have been many people who would have been against David killing the king of Israel. David would have been seen in a totally different light than if he were not the one to kill King Saul. And I believe David would have lived with guilt the rest of his life. David said, it is not my job to be the avenger. And that's exactly what the Apostle Paul tells us. In Romans chapter 12, he gives us this explanation and reminds us of this truth that David is teaching us. In verse 14 of Romans 12, it says, bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. Be of the same mind toward one another. Do not be haughty in mind, but associate with the lowly. Do not be wise in your own estimation. Never pay back evil for evil to anyone. Respect what is right in the sight of all men. If possible, so far as depends on you, be at peace with all men. Never take your own revenge, beloved, but leave room for the wrath of God. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, says the Lord. But if your enemy is hungry, feed him. And if he is thirsty, give him a drink, for in so doing, you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. That is our admonition. How do we treat those who treat us unfairly? You overwhelm them with good. In short, verse 14 says, you bless, don't persecute. You bless, you don't curse. Never pay back evil for evil. Be at peace with all men. Never take your own revenge. You take care of him, and in so doing, you will heap coals of fire. Burning coals on his head. What in the world does that mean? Have you ever felt guilty when you know you did something wrong and then they just treated you in kind? And you say, and it just kind of burns you. I shouldn't have treated you that way. I'm sorry. I think that's the idea here. You treat him in such a way that he will have a guilty conscience. You overcome evil with good. That's what we have David teaching us. You overcome evil with good. We need to know our role as a Christian. Our role to try and help our enemy out of their sin. Our role is not to punish them. Our role is not to teach them a lesson, if you know what I mean. That role belongs to God. Here's a good as place of any to talk about this, is the idea of respecting those God has put in charge. The reason David gives as to why he did not kill, among other, three times over, he says, Saul is the anointed that God put in place. Two times in verse 6 and then another in verse 10. How would you rate Saul as a king? F minus, right? Terrible. He was selfish. He was prideful. He was did everything that God told him not to do. Yet, what was David's response? How can I kill the one that God has put in charge over all of Israel? how are we with those who are authority over us? I think we need to be very careful about what we post, what we write, what we say. Let me give you a thought. Look at 1 Peter. 1 Peter chapter 2 in verses 13 to 17, and then we'll look at chapter 3, 13 to 17. And we're looking at what Peter told, how Peter told Christians to react under a terrible leader. I believe the ruler over the world at this point is Nero. You'd be hard-pressed to find a more corrupt, a more wicked person than Nero. Yet how are we to respond? How is a Christian to respond to someone as bad as that? I would say even worse than King Saul. Well, if you're in chapter 2, look at verse 13. Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether to a king, can I just say, change that to whether it be a president, right? That'd be our similarity. Whether to a president as the one in authority or to governors as sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and the praise of those who do right. For such is the will of God that by doing right you may silence the ignorance of foolish men. Act as free men and do not use your freedom as a covering for evil, but use it as bond slaves of God. I love verse 17. Honor all people. Love the brotherhood. Fear God. And if I can translate again, honor the president. Doesn't matter who that president is. You give respect to his office, just as David did to wicked old King Saul, who wanted his life more than anything else. Look at chapter 3. Again, starting in verse 13. Who is there to harm you if you prove zealous for what is good? Is that going to get you out of all trouble? No, verse 14. But even if you should suffer for the sake of righteousness, you are blessed. And do not fear their intimidation, and do not be troubled. But sanctify Christ as Lord in your hearts, always being ready to make a defense to everyone who asks you to give an account for the hope that is in you, yet with gentleness and reverence, and keep a good conscience, so that in the thing in which you are slandered, those who revile your good behavior in Christ will be put to shame. For it is better, if God should will it so, that you suffer for doing what is right rather than doing what is wrong. Again, what is our role? Our role is do what's right. Our role is be zealous for what's good. And you say, well, yeah, but if I'm zealous for what's good, that could lead me into persecution. That could be. But you continue to do what's right. And the last thing that David powerfully teaches us, you remember who is the judge. You remember one day that you will have to go before God and give an account. Again, notice verse 12. In verse 15 of 1 Samuel 24, when David was faced with the temptation of getting rid of his enemy once and for all, what did he remember? What came to his mind? I will be judged by God. My actions today, I will have to give an account for. I tell you, one of the most valuable things that we can have in the forefront of our minds every single day is this right here. I'm going to be judged. God is going to judge me. The more we remember we will stand before the judgment seat of God for our actions, the better we are going to respond, even in the most difficult situations. Even when people are being unfair to us, when they have no reason to, we're going to say, I'm in charge of my actions. I'm in control of me, and therefore, I'm going to choose what's right. What they do, Saul, you will be judged by God, but also I will be judged by God as well. God is going to judge them according to their actions. God is going to judge us according to our actions. So when it is all said and done, may we say, as Jesus said in Matthew chapter 25, may it be said of us, well done, good and faithful servant. Enter into the joy of your master. It struck me as we were looking at Paul's defense this morning in Acts, the three things that he said to Felix. His sermon was based on three words. He said, I want to teach you reasoned about righteousness and self-control and the coming judgment. I said, that's a great summary of what of my sermon is all about. Righteousness. Are we going to do what's right? Self-control. Are we going to control our actions? And the coming judgment. Do we understand we will be seated by God, being judged by Him? If we can remember those three words, I'm so glad we hit that text. If we can just remember those three words, we'd be doing well. Righteousness, self-control, and judgment. If there is anyone here who needs to respond to the invitation, who needs to make their life right with God because they know if they were to stand before the judgment seat of God, things would not go as they would want, come make your life right with God. Whenever way you need to make that happen, we encourage you to do that now as we stand and as we sing.